Hello and welcome back to the Klaviyo Data Science Podcast. If this is your first time joining us, I hope you enjoy your stay. I'm your host, Michael.
And I'm your host, Zach.
If you've followed the tech industry over the years, you're likely familiar with increasingly large efforts through the years to foster equity, diversity, and inclusion, also known as EDI. There are quite a few reasons for that push, but two of the most obvious are: A, tech is an industry that traditionally doesn't have the best track record of diversity and inclusion, and this represents a real attempt to improve representation for many people who currently work in tech or will in the future. And B, more equity, diversity, and inclusion means better products, better working conditions, and better companies. We spend a lot of time on this podcast talking about using data, using analytics, using data science to deliver value to your customers. This is a case where customers can both mean members of your own teams as well as end users of your platform. To help explain the world of data in EDI, this month we're talking with a few members of the people team at Klaviyo. Let's do quick introductions. Who are you and what do you do at Klaviyo? Let's go ahead and start off with Aarthi.
Hi, thanks for having me here today. My name is Aarthi Sharma. Pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm a senior specialist on the equity, diversity, inclusion, and corporate social responsibility team at Klaviyo. I get the pleasure of helping with two really big buckets that are part of the EDI world. So really specifically, we have three buckets: people, process, and product. So the two that I get to really influence and support the company's efforts around are around processes and product. So processes includes everything in the employee lifecycle, which is a generic but true term. So everything from when you are recruited to receiving an offer to the pay that you receive to promotions and those big stretch assignment opportunities. And the product piece is really around, as a company who has a product, is our product the most accessible in terms of people with disabilities and various needs? But also, are we using inclusive language throughout the company, but also in the product, even in code where it may not be visible to all? But I really get to support and work with teams across the company to make the world, especially the Klaviyo world, more accessible, more inclusive, and more diverse.
Excellent. Welcome onto the podcast. And Alexandria, you are up next.
Thank you. Very excited to be here. My name is Alexandria Nunez-Bibby. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I've had the pleasure of working at Klaviyo for 4 years. I started my journey here as a campus recruiter. And last April, I transitioned into the EDI and CSR team. And I manage our ERGs, meaning I help drive the culture here at Klaviyo. My main priority is creating a safe space for historically marginalized groups to feel welcomed, valued, and heard. That's a little bit of a sneak peek into my role, since I know we'll be diving a little bit deeper into what ERGs mean.
Absolutely, we will be. I just want to say thank you both for coming on the show today. Really excited to dive into this topic. And on that note, Zach, do you want to kick us off?
Absolutely. So I'd wager that just about everybody listening to this episode has probably heard of EDI, but I would imagine that probably quite a few would not be able to point to specific ways that they've interacted with EDI recently. Let's set a common foundation here. What is EDI and why is it important?
Yeah, this is Aarthi. I can start with that one. And I'll say a caveat here is that when we speak about equity, diversity, and inclusion, there isn't one standard definition. I think there are some broad strokes that go across definitions at different companies, but everywhere can have a little bit of nuance there. And I think oftentimes in a world where, especially as speakers of English, we can speak very quickly and we want to create an acronym, sort of alphabet soup, EDI is said as EDI. But really, I think one of the goals I'm working on this year is to take a pause and really speak out the words. So equity, diversity, and inclusion are three separate sort of streams of work and buckets of work there. And one of the things that I love from an expert in this space, Lily Zhang, is that they describe equity, diversity, and inclusion as the outcomes that we achieve if we do the work. And so thinking about it in that way really helps me to frame it as the action-oriented sort of aspects of equity, diversity, and inclusion. So equity, what does equity mean? Equity is really about the presence of well-being in the absence of discrimination. And equity and equality are different. And some companies use equality and not equity, or equity and not equality. So just kind of keep that in mind. Diversity. Diversity is really around everyone seeing themselves represented in the environment that they work in our case, the workplace. And inclusion has everything to do with people feeling valued, respected, and heard. And so when we think about why is it important, I think one thing that makes equity, diversity, and inclusion really important is what people might misconstrue about EDI based on their experience or lack of experience. And that is that EDI, in my point of view and in my experience, has been about making the world a better place for all, not just for some. And so thinking through that practice, it's really, there is space for everyone to be a part of equity, diversity, inclusion efforts at their company or in their communities as well.
So more concretely, how does this play into how an organization operates?
That could be the sole topic of our conversation today. But as I know it won't be, I think EDI plays into an organization in a lot of ways. And when we think about what is the purpose of EDI or what are some of the non-specific, meaning percentage kind of oriented goals at a company, I think those two questions kind of play hand in hand here. So EDI really plays into an organization because there are a few things, again, as outcomes that companies want to see, achieve, and be associated with. And that comes down to employee experience. As an employee at a company, do I feel like I am in the place that I want to be? Do I feel valued? Do I feel seen? Do I feel heard? Do I feel like a part of the company? Another thing is really around equity. So, and when it comes to pay, opportunities, and promotions, things like that, is there an equitable process across the company? Are people being judged, their performance being judged on clear and consistent criteria? And when we have EDI and a company has it, not only is its value, but really lives the value in their connection and support of equity, diversity, inclusion, it increases the talent pool that's available, right? There are plenty of statistics from McKinsey and from other organizations that show that job seekers, especially those that are Gen X, are really looking to companies to say, is diversity, equity, and inclusion something that the company really embodies? Is it not just something that's on their website, but is it something that they embody? And as a consumer, am I looking to companies that have diversity, equity, inclusion as a part of their framework? Because more and more consumers are looking to companies in that regard as well. And I think the last piece is really around decision-making and innovation. A lot of research, and I can share with the co-host later, around a lot of articles, especially from Harvard Business Review and other research organizations, really show the benefits of diverse teams, inclusive teams, when it comes to not only performance for the team, but in the space of innovation. Do people feel like they can contribute? And innovation is such an essential part of the work that we all do, whether you work for a tech company or not. So those are some of the bigger themes of why EDI is important and how it shows up in a company's day-to-day.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect segue into the next question we wanted to ask, because I think it gives maybe an early view of what one answer to this question is. I think we talked a little bit about why EDI matters, but I think it's a somewhat new realization for a lot of people. If we go back a generation, two generations, I think EDI was probably painfully far from just about any company's priorities, but today, it's a lot more pervasive. A 2020 survey from Glassdoor showed that 76% of employees and job seekers say that a diverse workforce is important when they're evaluating companies and job offers. I guess the question here, and again, I think you already gave one good answer to this, but I'm curious if there are more. When did this all change and why?
The thing that I will say about equity, diversity, and inclusion work is that it has everything to do with people and everything to do with the human part of being a person. So as society has evolved and as things have changed, as legislation has changed and has come into play, I mean, a lot of what we now know as equity, diversity, and inclusion in the corporate world, typically in the US, so I will throw that caveat out there, has everything to do with the 1960s, the civil rights movement, has to do with affirmative action, it has to do with lawsuits and laws and elements changing. So diversity and inclusion trainings and things had started kind of becoming a part of the workplace, right? But then as society has changed, as what we determine to be important to us as humans, as those that are in the workplace, what it looks like for our communities, how we identify. All of those things have been shifting, growing, changing over the last, I would say, 40 to 50 years. So as we have changed in our expectations as consumers, as members of communities, as members of society at large, as those have changed, companies have had to change the way in which they show up as well. And so I think I can't say that there's one moment in time where everything changed. I will say as of late, within the last 5 years, from a corporate EDI landscape, with the murder of George Floyd and other social sort of unrest and things that have happened, I'd say truly in the last 5 years within the United States and globally, that's really put a spotlight on companies to see how are they showing up, not only externally for consumers, but for employees, right? With the additions and the growth of social media, what stays within a company doesn't always stay within a company. And so people are being asked as investors, as employees, as citizens, what is it that companies are doing to really say, this isn't right, this is right? How does that look from a corporate lens? So I think we as companies are staying in touch with ourselves as human beings. Like, what is it that matters to us? What does that look like? And how does it connect with our values and our bottom line as a company and how we see ourselves?
Yeah, that point really resonates with me. I think the number of times that I've seen over the last 3 or 4 years, just something that was said during a company all hands meeting or something that was an internal facing email that is no longer internal facing. And I think it's exactly those points where a person's values and kind of the company values that are, I guess, aspired to versus actually enacted, like really that's the points where those are in friction or where you see that happen the most.
Yeah. And I think also companies are being, I don't know if this is a fair word, but scrutinized really to say, okay, you made this pledge about the environment. You made this pledge about some civic unrest somewhere in the world or this catastrophe that's happened in this community. Then what? So making pledges and things is one aspect, and it's really important to show that you as a company have determined that, yes, you're in alignment with something. But then what does that look like after the pledge, right? After the signature? And so I think as things continue to evolve and change everywhere, it's going to be something that companies are called upon to answer those questions more and more as we continue to see like the future of where EDI is.
So kind of directly in that vein, what are some of the goals of EDI at a large tech company like Klaviyo?
I think the goals that we have at Klaviyo are similar to what I shared in the question before. So what is it that we want in our workplace? If any person came to interview and to join Klaviyo, what is it they want? We, while understanding that life experience is different for everyone, what we do want to ensure is that people are evaluated fairly, that they are paid fairly and equitably. We want to make sure that people, when they come to work, are treated with respect and are going to be in an environment that is psychologically safe for them, physically safe for them, and that when there are opportunities for providing support or additional items for individuals to do the best work that they can, that we are doing what we can as a company to help people do the best work that they can. So if that's a physical accommodation, if that's something else, that we as a company are doing what we can to make sure that Klaviyos can come to work and thrive and be a part of the innovation and the excitement that we all hope and get to experience every day. So really around the employee experience is crucial, and equity and pay, as I mentioned. Another important goal for us in the equity, diversity, inclusion space, especially at Klaviyo, is are we reflective of the diversity amongst our customers? So when we're thinking about customers in that sense, truly externally, do we reflect the diversity in the communities and the customer base that we have? What are ways in which, and this is something that we're working on more so this year, is what are the opportunities for engagement with our customers? What does that look like? Are there opportunities for us to partner with customers in certain communities? How can we help get the word out about Klaviyo as an equity, diversity, inclusion, and corporate social responsibility team? You may think, is that a space for customer engagement? And we think it is. And so we really want to make sure that we're connecting our Klaviyos, our internal employees and customers with our external to really build partnerships and strengthen some bridges to communities that we may not have had in place before.
So on the subject of communities, Alexandria, you're on the show today partially because you're the Klaviyo expert on ERGs. To start with, I'd like to define our terms and make sure that everyone knows what we're referring to here. What is an ERG?
Yes. So an ERG is an acronym. It stands for Employee Resource Groups. At some companies, they're called Affinity Groups. Others call them BRGs, which is Business Resource Groups. But to make this initiative very specific to Klaviyo, we added some flair and we call them KRGs. But ERGs in general are volunteer-driven, employee-led, and the goal is to really bring members together around a shared identity and or background. So when I say shared identity, I mean the connections between race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, disability. And so these groups aim to foster an inclusive workplace and culture. So an environment of belonging, very similar to what Arthi said about psychological safety, making sure everyone feels respected. And so our ERGs manage events, different initiatives around celebrating cultural heritage months, raising awareness about a specific event, a specific issue, and really provides a platform for members to connect with one another. They're also known as thought leaders, so they could be used for business focus groups. If there is a company that is trying to market a product specifically for the Hispanic population, they could use their Latin ERG group to use them as a focus group and learn, would this product resonate with the community? So that's a couple of ways in which ERGs are known in the business.
So you definitely started to answer this, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about how ERGs or KRGs help a tech company fulfill some of the EDI goals that we were talking about.
Absolutely. So our KRGs are responsible for driving our dynamic culture. We strive to make our community inclusive and just a remarkable place for Klaviyos to learn and grow. And so we host an array of programming that really focuses on intentionality, intersectionality, and really thinking through how can we provide professional development opportunities? How can we provide an educational support? How can we have social activities? How are we creating a place for psychological safety? I would love to kind of share more about the KRGs that we have, if that's okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. Please.
Yeah, of course.
So we have globally 12 KRGs, and we've added some fun Klaviyo puns around them. So we have Latino, we have Ladies Collaborative, K Pride, K Families, Black, Same, and Kappa. And throughout all of those, they build community in many different ways. And so for psychological safety, I would love to talk about Black hosted a healing session when kind of all of the social injustice and police brutality was happening, and it was a great safe space for people to process and kind of vent. We've had events where there's intersectionality, where K Families worked with Black to provide books around Black authors and Black characters. We've also had Kladies and K Pride work together to really talk about why pronouns matter. And so those are kind of some quick pointers of how we do have social events, but we do have kind of spaces where people can feel safe and comfortable and valued.
Yeah, I think that that's so important, and it's so much more valuable for it to kind of come from the bottom up. Like instead of the business telling people, here's why this is important, it's so much more meaningful to be hearing from your peers directly why this is important to them.
One other piece that I wanted to mention, kind of to what your point around having something that's very kind of grassroots led, there was a moment where I shouted out and I was like, yes, this is why KRGs matter. And it was a conversation that happened in our K Families Slack channel. And someone, a Klaviyo, had typed in and said, oh, I'm really interested in being a foster parent. Is anyone else a foster parent? And the thread continued to increase in terms of like people saying like, yes, I'm a foster parent, or like, oh, I've always been interested in it. And in that moment, they created their own kind of foster parent Slack group. And so I thought that that was very much the beauty of like, wow, someone needed a resource, didn't know where to go, but went to the right place and was able to create another group, specifically a marginalized group that don't necessarily have the resources that they need.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I didn't know about that.
With people that presumably they already know and trust to some degree because, you know, they work together. So,
right.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's very cool. I'm going to ask you all a question after this that like kind of pertains to both of you, but to shift gears slightly. So Arthi, we talked a little bit before this episode about your personal approach or view of EDI. And you mentioned that it's kind of both of a heads and hearts approach that mm-hmm. really starts with evidence, or I think befitting the name of this podcast, with data. Can you tell us a little bit more about your approach?
Yeah. So I appreciate that you said personal because it is my approach to the equity, diversity, and inclusion space, which I've been in for a few years now. And when I think about the initial conversations that I have with somebody that I work with, it really gives me a great opportunity to be an active listener and understand where people are coming from when they come to the conversation. People make it abundantly clear within the first few sentences if it's the head part or the heart part or neither, let's be real, that really resonates with them. So when I think about EDI, and as I mentioned earlier, and this is why I love the work that I do, EDI has everything to do with people, not only people, but primarily people. And people as humans, we have a few needs, at least according to Maslow, right? So that has things, everything to do with safety, security, and a sense of belonging, among other things. So this really plays to the heart part of the EDI acronym. It's my responsibility as an EDI practitioner to work, and this is one of the parts of my job that I absolutely love the most. I get to work with teams across the company. So yes, my team is within the people or the HR organization, but by no means are they the only folks that I work with. I do love my people, but I love that I get to work across. So I'm working with learning and development teams. I'm working with PR. I'm working with internal comms. I'm working with engineering teams to really help others understand what are the elements that we need in place to create an inclusive culture or to create psych safety. One, what does that mean? And how do we achieve it? And what does that look like for your team? You on your data science team may have a different culture and approach to how you do things. I'm not here to change that. I'm here to say, how can I, with an equity, diversity, and inclusion lens, help you bring in some of these best practices into what you're working on? Now, with that said, some of the examples that Alexander shared are perfect for illuminating that connection part of the work that we get to do. Another part of it is data. Storytelling is integral to what I do. Having people feel a sense of connection, belonging, share anecdotally how something is making them feel, what the company culture is like for them as their lived experience. But at the end of the day, you're going to get folks, rightfully so, who are like, what does that look like, really? What does that mean? Where is the data? Asterisk, data doesn't lie, but it doesn't always tell the whole story. So that's why the narrative piece is really important to the work that I do. But that's the thing. I think to give one example, it is going to be more impactful for leaders and executives to hear something like, I'm making this up, so just for transparency's sake, if we say something like, we believe, or in our experience, or we've been told that Asian American and Pacific Islander employees at the company don't feel a sense of inclusion or belonging. That's one point of data in the largest air quote sense that you can't see. But another way to approach that is if we're using employee engagement surveys, if we're collecting information and we say something like, from the latest employee engagement survey, 53% of Asian American Pacific Islander employees rated, I feel a sense of connection to the company at the lowest level possible. While informative, it gives a very different piece of information and utilizing data that is going to be applicable across the organization. So when I'm thinking through what's the story that I want to tell, data has to be a large part of that conversation and that thought process of sharing information across the company, because data is also a huge factor in making decisions for what programming, what process changes we're recommending, what priorities we want are going to come from data, because that is one of the most valuable ways that we're able to quantify change or determine if change isn't taking place and then to course correct. So that's kind of my thinking when I think through the hearts and minds approach to EDI.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And I think going back to that asterisk you mentioned, like, it's important to have that asterisk because, like, data itself might not lie, but, you know, people do, and people are the ones who are collecting data and interpreting it. So I wanted to dig into that a little bit more, just the process of getting the right data and making sure that you're interpreting it correctly. Like, to both of you, what sort of data do you need to make your approach to EDI and make your approach to EDI work and kind of enable you to actually achieve the outcomes that you want to achieve?
Yeah, those are big, important questions that I love. If I was to give you a short personal answer, it would be, I want all of the data. That's always not, I will say that's usually not possible for issues around data privacy, data security, especially when we're thinking about companies that have a global footprint. Access to data and what is collected specifically when it comes to demographics does alter by country to country. So all those considerations from a legal perspective within the US and outside are considerations to think of. As I think specifically, though, to your question, Michael, around data that's needed for EDI sort of goals, outcomes, and in that space in particular, I think of a few things that may seem simple, but that are simple and important. So number of employees, demographics of demographic representation of employees, as well as demographic information for cities or countries to give us a good sense of, okay, if we are taking an approach of setting goals for diversity representation, one important factor is going to be what do we currently have within the company, but also what do the demographics look like for the city or the country that we're located in. So those things are important. And I think also it kind of goes into other aspects, as I was mentioning earlier, of the employee life cycle, right? So what does it look like for promotion and retention of all employees? Are there any trends that we can see when we look at that data? Are more people who work from an office location, are they receiving promotions at a higher rate than those who work remotely? Are some folks in, let's say, a Paris office getting promoted at a lower rate than those who are in a headquarter or, you know, in the case of Klaviyo, a Boston office? So demographics are crucially important, but there's also the external. And I think a part of the process is working hand in hand with experts that we have within our company. And if your company is lucky enough to have a people analytics team that are curated by experts who understand how to collect data and how to also provide data to inform narrative and your decision. And as you were saying earlier as well, the information that we have at hand does need, I think this will be my word of the podcast, an asterisk to it sometimes. Because if we're getting information, it is supplied directly by employees. So is it the same thing to say that 52% of one particular group of employees said something and there's only four people in that group? Or are we saying company-wide? So having those footnotes and having an understanding of what the data is saying, what it isn't saying, how it's quantified are all crucial parts of the conversation that I'm having as the EDI and CSR team is working towards our goals. But as we're having conversations in partnership with other groups, so for recruiting and talent acquisition, for our executives who want to better understand where the company is, all of these data points do matter, and how we speak to them matters as well.
That was beautiful. Nailed it. Plus one. The only thing that I wanted to add in terms of data points was, you know, ERGs, KRGs are known for talent attraction or retaining of employees. And I think the data points that I would want to know is for retention is, in terms of all of our different KRGs, who is actually referring, who is using the referral program? Because if that's, you know, if people aren't referring their friends or past colleagues to the company, then maybe they don't feel that sense of belonging. Maybe they're not feeling that inclusive in the workplace. So that would be one. And then the other point that Arthi had mentioned was promotions. And so I also think that that speaks volume to the cycle of someone being at a company. So those were the two that I wanted to highlight. And then also just thinking through events and engagement, are a lot of people going to it? Like, is it always just the same, 100 people that are attending? And if that's the case, then how do we course correct? How do we make sure that we are having engaging programming that resonates with the community?
One thing I'll add to what Alexandra just shared, and this is a difficulty that I've experienced every tech company that I've worked for, is that there are different systems that capture different pieces of information, and all are really, really important. So if HR, your people organization, uses one application for everything to do with your benefits and requesting time off and things like that, and then like there's an LMS or a learning management system that captures other information, and then for us, for KRG sort of membership numbers, we're using something else. Unless we, this is the royal we, do a good job of collecting those information data points, I think it becomes really difficult to really share the true picture of what we're doing. And for that, I mean, a part of the storytelling that I mentioned, I want to be able to tell a beautifully woven story that people who participate in employee resource groups have received promotions, have participated in learning and training and development opportunities that the company has offered. They are also the least likely to take PTO days or whatever it is as one, random kind of data point. That to me is always something that I am trying to triangulate, because I want to be able to say that the work that Alexandra and myself and the rest of our team does directly impacts employees in spaces that they don't even know. We're not there yet, but I just wanted to call out a difficulty in collecting data and understanding what data is available.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to listen to you both talk about these data challenges and data availability, stitching together these disparate sources of data. Data sometimes doesn't tell the whole story, being able to convey sophisticated messages with it and thinking about sample size. These are all very familiar problems to anyone listening to this podcast, but I'd like to get a little more into the EDI part. Are there any special or unique challenges that come with the data that you use for EDI problems, or in the way that you have to use that data?
I think there are a few. One is access to data. It can be one thing for someone who's on an EDI and a CSR team to say, I need to find this. It would be helpful to the work that I'm doing to know this data point. The one is knowing what you want to find, where to find it, and do you as an employee have the right data access privileges in order to get that information? And then another sort of the other side of that coin, perhaps around data access, is you may be given information to help you influence a program decision or a process change, but it may not be something that is accessible or should be shared with all employees. So then it's sort of like, how do I use the information at hand? Can't put it on the slide. I can't share it out for all the reasons that make sense, right? I don't think any one of us is questioning data integrity or privacy or any of those things. But how can I use information to better help us understand, okay, this is a mirror to where we are now. This is a reflection point. And can it serve as a compass to help us understand how to move forward? And I think one of the conversations that Alexandra and I have been having as we're learning more in this space around that sort of marriage between data and EDI is maybe there are some fights to fight when it comes to access to information, but sometimes maybe it's a matter of us taking a pause and saying, what information do we have access to? What data points do we know? And what is the narrative we can tell around what we do have access to? And I think that's something that we're trying to figure out. We may not have all the pieces that we need, but from the pieces we do have, what is the story? What does the picture look like? So I think that's something that we're working through and better understanding. And the way in which we do that is consulting with each other and peers at different companies, not to give away all their info, but sort of what is their thought process in tracking EDI-related goals, or if they're doing a report at the end of the year, what is it that they value? What is it that they think is important to tell their story?
This is really taking me back to the years of kind of health research that I did in grad school. So many similar problems there with just not having access to the data that you theoretically need, everything being blinded in every possible way that you can think of. So definitely, I think these are really, really familiar challenges and sometimes frustrations, but, you know, things that it also is very rewarding to overcome, I would say, for a lot of people in data science.
Yeah, it's an interesting field in that regard because, you know, in data science, we often don't have the data that we need or it's hard to find, but EDI data can be so deeply personal that it's not, for one thing, people might not want to give it out, even if you ask, and it's, you know, really not something that people are going to want to have fall into the wrong hands or be used inappropriately. So yeah, it just has this whole other level of restriction and personality around it.
Yeah, and something that you just said resonated with me. And I think one of the core tenets of the work that we do in EDI in particular has everything to do with building trust. And that's with our customers in the case of internal for our colleagues, but also it can be external. It's really around, do the people that we work with trust us to provide that information about how they identify? Do they trust that that information will be shared with only those who need it to be shared with? Do they trust the company to do something about that data? You have this information now. Now what? And so whether it's providing demographic info, whether it's employee engagements, or all of us have, you know, in our careers, probably filled out 1,000 surveys. And the inevitable question we all think when we get that next link in an email is, what will be done with it? And so I think the trust component of data as it relates to EDI, for what you just shared in terms of we're in the like, as corny as it sounds, we're in the business of people. And so we need to do what we can to build and keep and maintain trust with our colleagues.
That's so important. I'm curious how you go about that, like how you view the process of building trust and of maintaining that.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting space to be in, honestly, because oftentimes those that we are looking to build trust with are those who typically are from underrepresented communities and may have trepidation around providing that information because they're from groups that are not considered to be a part of a majority or a properly resourced community. So I think there are a few components that go with building that trust. Is one, is keeping our word. If we say we're going to do something, we do it. And if we can't, we say why. It's also helping people to understand, why is the EDI team or the company asking a question? What are they hoping to gain from access to that information? And then I think another component is really around listening. A lot of what Alexandra does, a lot of what I do, is listening to our peers and helping them to feel that sense of inclusion. But also to better understand what the needs are. We can pull from data, we have access to information, we can make recommendations and things like that. But if it's not something that is a need or a desire or is going to gain traction with our colleagues, then that isn't going to work. So a part of the trust is keeping our word, is making commitments to make the company better for all employees. And really understanding what is it that is stopping or inhibiting somebody from having a great experience while working at this company. And then figuring out what is it that we can do about that and what does that look like. So a lot of what we do is around trust and relationship building.
I'm also curious your thoughts on that, Alexandria, since obviously with ERGs, KRGs being volunteer led, like it seems like the trust is even more important in that sense. I guess I'm curious, do you have like another view on this or?
Let's see. I feel like Arthi did nail it. But in terms of the KRG leads, since we do ask a lot of them in terms of like doing their regular 9-to-5 job, and then on top of that, creating intentional programming for the community, I do take a lot of time to just build the relationship of like, hey, I know it was your mother's birthday last week. What did you guys end up doing? And so making sure that there is like a personal connection and not just transactional. So it feels a little bit more holistic. And I think it's a lot of, to Arthi's point, just listening. Because sometimes they're not looking for a response of like, I need you to do this. They just want to just chat it out and just say it. And they're like, okay, back to business. And how can I support you? And I think that question of me just asking, like, I know we have these things to do. How can I support you? What can I do to take off your plate so that you're not feeling overwhelmed? And so those little things help build the trust. So yeah, small acts, big impact.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, I think the fact that we're dealing so much with people here, definitely, it's... On this podcast, we are ultimately dealing with people because most of the time an end user is a person, but this is a different side of the story. Very interested in hearing it. And actually, going back to that idea of end users are people as well, I'd like to return to the product focus that you mentioned at the start of the episode, Arthi. One example that you brought up before this episode to give an example of EDI in practice was auditing the language that we use as a development team. I think that whenever we talk about a feature or a product, we typically like to start with the why on this podcast. So I'd like to start there. What does an inclusive language audit help us with as a development team and as a company?
Yeah, that's a great question. The inclusive language audit was a body of work that I carried forward. So efforts have been put in place, I think about a year, 18 months ago, and I joined Klaviyo last June, so June of 2023. And so it was a body of work that I got to carry forward. I loved it because I have been in equity, diversity, inclusion for many years, and I have worked at tech companies for many years, but I do not consider myself to be technical. So in speaking with engineers and understanding priorities and sort of scopes of work, it was a really fascinating process for me to go to. So I just want to like shout out for Klaviyo's always learning value because I definitely learned a lot. So there's a quote that says, if we don't intentionally include, we unintentionally exclude. And that was sort of the driving, I'm quotes driven. That's my favorite thing. But it was for me a starting point in thinking through, okay, when we look at the language that we use in everyday conversations, whether we're Slacking each other, whether we're in a Zoom call, whether we're in a meeting with each other, what language matters? And we all know that language has impacted us in ways that were tremendously helpful and in ways that were tremendously hurtful. And so in thinking across the company, yes, there are policies, procedures for me in partnership with others to look through and say, okay, is this language the most inclusive it can be? Is there something that was maybe more appropriate 10, 20 years ago, or maybe thought of to be okay, which it no longer is. And so the scope of work there was starting in terms of reviewing documents, things like that. But then when we thought about it as well, we have thousands, I don't know, probably more than that, lines of code available or in our product that help us make Klaviyo what it is. I gathered information from other companies, from other resources in the inclusive language space to see what are some commonly used terms in coding that are not considered to be inclusive language anymore. So I'm gathering all that information together, speaking with some of our engineering teams to say, hey, this is something that we think, based on initial conversations, not me guessing as a non-technical person, but we think this could be a low lift with high impact so that we understand that this language is no longer inclusive. And we don't want to put ourselves in a situation where if someone is copying code, that if there wasn't an uninclusive phrase used, that it's going to get replicated elsewhere. So in working with a few of the teams, I learned what a linter is and can do. And so we were able to use linters to go through some, not all, code to remove, to identify words that we determined were not the most inclusive and then offer replacements. And so that process went on. And again, right, it's not something that maybe you or I are going to see, but to understand that we took a holistic approach in thinking about inclusive language and where it's used and in what applications it's used in. So we're able to do that work, and we're in the process of making updates to engineering handbooks and things where pieces of information are made available to new employees and current employees to be able to say, we want to make sure that moving forward, we're building and using language that's inclusive, and also taking a step back and seeing, okay, again, holding that mirror up to ourselves, what is it that we have used in the past that we no longer want to? And I think one thing I would add is that I personally got to have conversations and to interact with people I might not in my day-to-day role to understand what words, terms that they wanted to offer as these are not the most inclusive. Can we remove this? Here are some ways in which this language cannot be changed because it's connected too far into the system for us to make a swift change now. But let's work towards figuring out what that could look like in the future. So taking the approach of thinking about, yes, what are we using internally, but also in a space that no one will see or very few will see, what are the opportunities for inclusive language there, which I think is really, really neat.
Yeah, maybe like the number of people who see it isn't as large, like obviously as the Klaviyo user base, but it is important. I mean, imagine you're a Klaviyo engineer, it's your first day and you jump into the code base and you see something that is just an immediate, like, wait, what? Why is that phrase here? Especially right. If it's an onboarding document, like the engineering handbooks you were talking about. Or
yeah,
because, I mean, you know, the language of code doesn't come from nowhere. People wrote it in the first place. So it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's exactly it, that we are taking the time to look at what has been built and where we are now and having the intention of building better as we move forward is something that really excites me about sort of a potential cross collaboration opportunity for EDI and engineering. So that was a great project.
So to wrap up here, a question that we often like to ask experts in a field that we ourselves don't know as much about is, what's on the horizon? What's next? What do you both think is one of the most exciting advancements in EDI that we're going to see over the next 5 or 10 years?
Alexandra, you want to go first?
Yeah, I can go first. So I was thinking about this for a while. And I think the future of work is very interesting in the sense of there's going to be a population of folks going into the office, and there's a population that are fully going to work remote. And so I was looking at the idea of inclusive training, and so how it could be virtual and augmented reality for inclusive training. And I was reading about like how it could mitigate bias and talk about harassment and different discrimination. And so I thought it was interesting the fact that there is this like empathetic lens to having this virtual reality piece of it. And so I also thought about like, how could it be inclusive in the sense of, you know, if someone's visually impaired or hearing impaired, like what type of VR could come out of that? And how can DEI continue to just be an inclusive platform for all?
I guess that leaves me. I think I have more, my list is more about wishes and predictions and hopes rather than what we will definitely see. I wrote a few things. For me, one, I would love to see in the next few years, companies that have equity, diversity, inclusion teams and leaders of those teams and those efforts reporting directly to CEOs. I think it shows an investment and a prioritization of equity, diversity, inclusion work for a company. And the caveat there, in case anyone's sort of wondering why I said that, oftentimes leaders of diversity and inclusion are dotted line into another member of a C-suite executive as opposed to directly. So I think that one is great. I hope. Another one, and I've been in this work for 7+ years now, and people ask me why I've been in this work for 7+ years now. I believe in change, and I believe in finding joy in small wins. And so for me, in understanding that we're in the business of people, and it has taken generations for things to happen that we are sometimes now trying to unfold and unpack and dismantle, it will take time for things to change. And so every small win of someone feeling that they are in the right place in terms of being at the company that they're at and feeling like they have a community, whether it's through an employee resource group or just an inclusive culture, I want those things to be celebrated. And then something else that is really top of mind for me is doing what I can to help support the people with disability community to be a consideration and considered a part when we're having conversations around diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. That's something that I'm really passionate about, and change starts with me. So focusing on supporting as many communities as I can in the work that I do. I am, to Alexandra's point, and I keep seeing it more and more, the sort of like EDI, AI, where's the future? I don't know. I'm really, really interested in a lot of different ways about what that can, should, will look like for us, given the bias can be built into anything and it can also not be. So I am fascinated and scared and excited to figure out where this all goes.
Yeah, we've absolutely talked about the ways that bias can be built into AI before. And honestly, we could probably do a full episode on that and maybe should in the future. But I don't know if we have enough time for that in the negative 1 minute remaining we have on the Zoom meeting. So
it's going to be a whole new world, right? Maybe, yeah. Question mark.
Well, in the meantime, I would like to say to both of you, thank you so much for being on the Klaviyo Data Science podcast and talking through these important issues with us. It was a pleasure having you on. I think we got to have a deep discussion here, which I always love having discussions like this. I felt like we didn't have to do very much, which is great. So thank you so much for being on.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
This episode, as all episodes of the Klaviyo Data Science podcast are, is sponsored by Klaviyo. If you want to know more about Klaviyo, Klaviyo's intelligent marketing automation platform makes it easy for marketers to centralize and use every piece of data and deliver hyper-personalized experiences across all of their channels, increasing conversions and revenue. You can learn more at klaviyo.com. That's klaviyo.com. If you liked what you heard on this episode, please subscribe to the podcast in whatever place that you're currently listening to it. Leave us a rating, leave us a review. Those all boost us a lot. They help us in the algorithm. They help more people hear episodes like the one that you just heard. Obviously, if you are interested in this episode and you know someone else who might be, you know someone who might be interested in the content that you just heard about equity, diversity, and inclusion, or any of our other episodes in our history, which you can find on Medium or in wherever you're listening to this episode right now, then go ahead and send them the episode directly. That is the best way to make sure that someone is able to listen to the content that you just heard. Send it directly. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about what you just heard on this episode, the best person to contact is me. The best place to reach me is my Twitter account. That's Lawson_M_T, LAWSON_M_T. Thank you for listening. Have a great month.